It's obvious that Aussies can't spell and don't know the alphabet very well, because inside this shirt it says XL, and it's obviously just a medium, otherwise it wouldn't be this tight. Anyway, we're... So, well, thank you. Thank you for your kindness. Thank you for this, and really appreciate it. But thank you for your kindness and generosity in giving. I really appreciate it. I promise you we will use your resources well. I promise you we'll do that. We really, really will do that. We're going to spend a little bit more time together. And I thought we'd just do something a little bit creative and fun to start. So the great thing, what I love about Australia, all the jokes now, what I love about Australia is your passion for sport. Your just passion for life. You just do that stuff really well. So I thought what would be great to do is to talk to each other about that, but in a creative way. So a sheet of paper like this, Alcan foil, is going to be handed around to all of you, okay? And what I'm going to ask you to do is do something creative, okay? I'm going to ask you to create a sculpture, okay, with this piece of Alcan foil about something you're passionate about, okay? Just a sculpture of something, okay? And just create it. What you can't do is do this and say, I like football. You can't do that, okay? Yeah, that's not particularly creative. So you just need to be a bit more creative than that. Actually, it was quite good there for an Englishman, wasn't it? And he's recorded something. That was fantastic, you know. Actually, I was, just a quick aside while they're handing out the papers, I was part of this kind of English-Aussie sledging thing during the Ashes, and my favourite one was a little text, so you've probably seen this, said, telephone goes in Australian changing room. Guy picks up and said, is Michael Clark there? And they said, he's just going out to bat. And the guy said, it's all right, I'll wait. Anyway, so... So what I'd like to do is just over the next 10 minutes or so is just create some kind of sculpture. Something, you might want to rip it up, just something about which you are passionate, okay? So I'll give you about, five, 10 minutes to do that, and then I'll invite you to have a conversation, show some people around you around that stuff, okay? So 10 minutes, something you're passionate about, create a sculpture, a physical sculpture if you can. You might need to rip it up into different bits and pieces, but just some kind of sculpture which shows us something that you are personally passionate about. Music maestro, please, and away you go. So we began. I mean, well, it's amazing. So two things are self-evident from just looking at some of your creations. Number one, some of you are immensely creative. I mean, the creative capability is extraordinary. And secondly, some of you really, really do have some mental health challenges by what you've created. It's very, very clear. I'm like, really? Anyway, so what are you passionate about? What are things that drive you? What are things that you love to be involved with? And I want to encourage you to add to that list something that you've heard or something that you've taken from this weekend. That it might become something you focus upon. Might be the infinitum thing. Might be one of the stories. Might be one of the passages of scriptures. Might be one of the conversations you've had over lunch. Might be seeing a numpty Englishman in an Australian shirt. Whatever it is, but... Just to add to some of those things, say, hey, I'm going to bring some passion to this. I've spoken at lots and lots of weekends over the years. And we need what my friend of mine calls, we need PEE, post-event endurance. So what will enable the things that we've talked about this weekend to last beyond, you know, tea time today? I want to suggest a couple of things to you. We began with this quote. What makes authentic Christians is not visions, ecstasies, biblical mastery of chapter and verses, or spectacular success in ministry, but a capacity for faithfulness. Faithfulness. It's really interesting. In the UK, there's a bit of a trend at the moment for people who are soldiers of the Salvation Army to de-soldier. And certainly in my corps it's happened, because people say, well, yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't need to be in a uniform or whatever, so I'm going to de-soldier, and it means I can drink, you know. And I said, that's fine. I said, much rather you did that than be a soldier and drink, do the drink thing. But I think I'm a bit of an old dinosaur, me. As people say, well, you know, it's a Salvation Army thing. Well, no, it's not a Salvation, because when I became a soldier, I made a promise to God. I didn't make a promise to the Salvation Army. Frankly, I don't care if the Salvation Army lives or dies in one sense, because God will raise up something. That's not the issue. I made a promise to God. And there's this whole thing about promises and faithfulness and covenant, which I think is really, really important. And I just even hold on, because the same thing. So if I give myself permission to walk away from that covenant, well, what's the next one? Because I made a promise. And I think one of the things that we talk little about, but we should talk a lot more about as followers of Jesus and as blokes, is this word here. Faithfulness. Yeah, there's a debate that happens quite a lot in our country at the moment around the whole homosexuality debate. I know you've had that here. And sometimes the right wing says this. The right wing church community says, we have to kind of stand against this homosexual onslaught because it's really challenging the kind of foundations of the institutional, of the family. And I'm thinking to myself, are you on drugs? Are you nuts? Seriously, you actually think that homosexuality is a threat to the family? The institution, you really think that? The greatest threat to the family is not the gay community. The greatest threat to the family are heterosexuals that can't keep their promises. That is the greatest threat to the institution of the family. Heterosexuals, Christians, non-Christians, that can't keep their promises. That is the greatest threat to the institution of the family right across the world. Faithfulness. Faithfulness. So how might we be faithful men? Buffeted by the fickle winds of failure, battered by our own unruly emotions and bruised by rejection and ridicule. Authentic disciples may have stumbled and frequently fallen, yet they kept coming back to Jesus. Faithfulness. So what are we going to do? Another question we might ask is this. What do you want to be when you grow up? When you grow up, what do you want to be? I don't know how many of you ended up doing those things you wanted to be. How many of you here had a dream as a kid and you did the thing that you dreamt about as a kid? Apart from me, how many of you did that? Wow, a few of us. Not many of us these days. And all I wanted to do was be a policeman. So I did that. And it was wonderful. Loved it. Had a great time. But who do you want to be when you grow up? When you grow up, I don't mean kind of age-wise, but in terms of faith, who do you want to be? What kind of man do you want to be? And things we've talked about this weekend about self-leadership and self-mastery, what kind of man do you want to be? Who do you want to be? Who do you want to be known as? I'm a father of three children, and one of the questions I've often asked my kids in conversation about the decisions they make is, so how do you want people to describe you? What reputation do you want to have? When people say, oh, Yasmin, she's like that, or Isabel, she's like that, or Jake, he's like that, what do you want them to say? In modern parlance, what do you want your brand to be? What do you want to be when you grow up in faith? What do you want to be? Who do you want to be? In my experience, that often comes down to the nature of decisions that we make, and also the company that we keep. And as followers of Jesus, I found these questions foundational that I want to put on the screen now. And I wasn't sure whether I was going to do this. I was thinking about it, as those you know who I was talking to about this, and I'll carry on with it. And particularly to those of you that are leaders that are in the room, I want you to think about these four questions. You know, and they are this. You see, we come to weekends like this, and we make all sorts of promises and all sorts of commitments, but they dissipate very, very quickly. Unless, of course, dissatisfied with the status quo, inspiring vision of the future, plan for which we are accountable. So how would you answer these four questions? Who are you journeying with? Who's on your journey with you? Who's on the journey with you? Let me ask you another question in relation to that. Who do you confess your sin to? Who do you confess your sin to? We say, oh, God. Well, the Bible doesn't say that. Bible doesn't say confess your sin to God. I know we think it does, but it doesn't say that. What does it say? Confess your sins to one another. That's where the whole Catholic priest thing and confession thing came from. That's really quite powerful. when the Pope went to Toronto, they put all these boxes, these confessionals, all along the streets and got all the priests to go there because people just want to give people the opportunity to confess. And people do want to confess. If you know anything about psychology and guilt, you know guilt is such a toxic thing within our spirits. So we have to confess our sin. We have a need to confess our sin, or we suppress our sin, or we deny our sin, or we try and drown our sin. We do something with our sin, but we have to do something with our sin. If you're journeying with a brother, in a trusting kind of, you know, brother against brother, kind of, you know, band of brothers type thing, you can confess your sin in a safe place. I have a safe place I can confess my sin. As a safe place. Greg's a good buddy of mine. He's a safe place for me. He heard me confess one of my sins, so we had a conversation yesterday. They're safe places, safe relationships. We confess our sin. Who are you journeying with? If you want to grow up and be the most that God would have you be, you've got to be able to answer that question. Who is looking into your life? Who can ask you tough questions? Who can look right in the eye and say, Phil Wall, you stood on that platform in Australia and you made all these statements, but look at your life. What are we going to do about that? Because you've made these commitments, but this is how I see you live. So what's happening, son? I need someone to ask me those questions. You need someone to ask you those questions. Otherwise, we get stuck and we go stale. Who are you journeying with? Secondly, who are you investing in? Who are you investing in? Who are you sowing into? Whose life are you sowing into? Whose life are you helping to shape and to mold and to develop? There's a college in the UK. It's called the International College for Officers. It's a sabbatical college for Salvation Army officers. Do some great work there. I understand it's a really helpful thing for those that go. And I have the privilege of speaking at that each semester when they have a group of people. And I always finish with these four questions. Lots of people struggle to answer the first one. I never ask for a show of hands. But then when I ask the second one, there's a bit more shuffling on the seat. Who are you investing in? Who are you mentoring? Which leaders are you raising up and bringing on for the next generation? How are you doing that? Because for all of us, we need to be doing that. For Jared, last time I'm going to refer to you, Jared. For Jared and his posse that are here. Do you say posse or is that a silly thing to say, posse? Is that a bit out of date? Have I made a faux pas there? Is it posse okay? Okay. Hey, getting down with the kids. Anyway, for Jared's generation, who's mentoring them? Who's sowing into their lives? Who's saying, hey, how can I help? What opportunities do you want? What advice do you need? What sounding board do you need? How can I help you? Who's doing that? But actually, for the Jared posse, so who are you doing that for? Which 16-year-old, 17-year-old are you sowing into? Who are you helping to grow? Who are you helping to develop? Who are you investing in? How's that working? It's really important. Take responsibility for it. Take responsibility for it. So who are you investing in? If we want to take weekends like this and make them live, not only should we journey with someone, but we should be investing in others. Why? Because it makes us accountable. That's why. This is rare for me. To be traveling and speaking on my own. And it's quite a costly thing to bring someone like me from the UK, although you haven't paid that this time, so you can't say, can I bring someone else? But the reason why I would feel safe to come is because I've got really good friends here. And the reason why when I preach, I travel is, number one, it means I can invest in someone. And the conversation we can have in the car or the plane or whatever on the way there are great conversations. I can ask them lots of questions. So it's great for them. It's also really great for me. Because when you stand up there and there's a bloke from your church is sitting on the second row, it's very difficult to exaggerate and tell lies, which I understand other preachers have done sometimes. No, never been an issue for me personally, but I understand that you can be tempted to exaggerate or make things sound a little bit too good. But when there's a bloke who sees you every week sitting on a front row, that's really quite difficult. So who are you investing in, gentlemen? I want to encourage you to think about it. Because actually when you start investing in someone, it makes you step up a bit. You've got to walk a bit taller. You've got to be a bit more committed. You've got to be a bit more careful how you do it. Why? Because somebody's watching your life. Because the moment you get into a relationship with someone that you're investing in and helping to shape and to mentor, guess what happens? At that very moment, they start keeping score. And they have every right to. because you've kind of stepped up into this role. So find people you can journey with, and find people then you can actually invest in. Thirdly, who you're sharing with. Who you're sharing with. Who are you sharing faith with? Whose life are you involved with? Whereby they might observe your life and you might observe their life and your lives might become entwined, and whereby in the context of that friendship, they might come to know Jesus. Who are you seeking to win for Jesus? Because you see, one of the great things about going away from a weekend like this, you think, I'm inspired, I'm motivated to kind of do more for Jesus and to kind of live the kind of life. Great. So who am I going to share that with? And what's really interesting is if you don't share it quickly, it starts to go stale. It's really interesting. Jesus, when he talked to his disciples, one of the things he said, you know, he said, if you come follow me, he says, streams of living water will flow. And a lot of people think it says flow into you. It doesn't say that. It says will flow through you. Through you. The problem is, if we only allow it to flow in but never flow out, guess what happens to water when it flows in but doesn't flow out? What happens to it? Goes stank. It gets all stinky. We become really stinky Christians if we're not sharing faith. When we're in churches where people aren't concerned about lost people who don't know Jesus, they become really stinky, smelly, filthy, stinky, smelly churches that have all sorts of problems, shouting and screaming at each other and not being nice to each other and disagreeing with each other and being spiteful to each other and not liking this and not liking this. And they have arguments over what clothes they wear or what hats they wear or what songs they sing. And the only churches that have those arguments are churches that don't care about lost people. Because the ones that care about lost people know that those are completely irrelevant peacetime issues. And when you're at war, you don't have time for peacetime issues because you're too busy fighting. But when you're not fighting, you can argue about what your uniform looks like or what songs you're singing. Well, you can have those conversations. It's utterly irrelevant. I was at the big Salvation Army gig in London. And there was a debate going on about the security and the future of Salvation Army banding. And trust me, I was a bandman, I play and all that. But my question was, what on earth are we talking about this for? We have the Middle East on the verge of all-out war. We have 50, 60, 70,000 people starved to death every single day, most of whom don't know Jesus. We've got growing inequality between rich and poor. We've got middle-class kids and families like ours committing suicide at a faster rate than any in the history of the human race. We've got men, women, and children used and abused and battered and left and isolated and rejected. And we're talking about a style of music. Seriously? Really? Really? That's what the choral society does. But not an army at war, surely. Surely not. Jesus said, streams of living water will flow through you. So I want to ask you a question, who you're sharing with. As someone who has led a corps, because I started one with my wife, and have had leadership responsibility sometime, question. Those of you that are leaders, who are you sharing faith with? Who are you sharing your life with? Who are you seeking to win for Jesus in your community? There's a phrase they use a lot in leadership development. Pace of the leader, pace of the team. Pace of the leader, pace of the team. People see their leaders seeking to win people and draw them in. Guess what? It encourages the same thing. Question, who are you sharing with? You want to seal what God has done this week in your own heart and spirit? Find some people to talk to about Jesus. Bring them into your family. Bring them into your home. Become part of their lives. Allow them to become part of yours. And in all the good bits and all the bad bits, guess what? They might well come to know Jesus. I came to Australia a few years ago to be involved in the Unlimited conferences. I brought my friend Paul that I talked about on that first night. Remember Paul? Yeah? Really interesting, particularly the letter came from my buddy Greg. Because what was the man's name that looked after me that weekend? He was my minder. Jeff. Jeff looked after me and Paul. Jeff didn't leave our side. Jeff was kind of attached by this umbilical call to me and Paul. He said, is there anything that you need? I mean, he was there. Wasn't quite whiting our bottoms, but, you know, he was like there doing everything for us possible. And as we're driving away, Paul says to me, I've never, ever met people as nice as that in my life. I've never met people like that before. It's Start sharing your life with people. Streams of living water flow through. And then finally, where are you living in risk? Where are you living in risk? We talked about this a little bit the other day. I can't remember, forgive me, I'm a bit tired. Or was it in the Q&A? Forgive me, I can't remember. But this whole idea that as followers of Jesus, we're called to live in this space between what we are able to do and what only God can do and live in that space. Let me read to you a story about a man that took a risk. Forgive me reading from this rather than my Bible, but my Bible print is quite small and I can read this. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted his disciples get back into the boat and cross the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost!" But Jesus spoke to them at once and said, "Don't be afraid. Take courage. I'm here." Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water towards Jesus. Thought a lot about that story. Thought a lot about the level of faith that was involved in that story. Talked about the level of risk that was involved. You know, number one, looking an idiot in front of his face, in front of his mates, if he started, you know, heading downwards into the depths if it happened. Number two, you know, the actual security of swimming, you know, going into deep water. Number three, shark. No, there weren't any sharks, but like, no, three, number three, you know. All the risks that were involved. And then I think about this, but actually, it was really quite simple. The only bit that Peter had to do was get out of the boat. The only thing Peter had to do was just get out of the boat. And then Jesus did the rest. Where are you living in risk? Some people sometimes say, you know, when I have enough faith, I'll take some risk. I think the exact opposite is true. When I take enough risk, I'll learn to have faith. It is the exact opposite way around. It's not when I have enough belief, then I can take some risks. It's no. Take some risks and God will build your faith. God will build your faith muscles as you take risk, and you put yourself in that place as Peter did by getting out of the boat where he couldn't just do what he could do, but only what God can do. And all you got to do is get out of the flipping boat. And as you take risk, God will build faith. If you want to take what God has done this weekend and make it live longer than this, have a good answer to those four questions, or at least commit yourself to answer those four questions in the coming weeks. Going to find someone to journey with. My sense is for many of you, you don't have anyone. You don't have anyone you trust enough to confess your sin to. You know, because the problem with sin is if it's not confessed, sin is one of those things. You've either got to confess it to someone, or you've got to pretend it doesn't exist. We either got to assume that none of you have ever sinned and aren't sinning, or that you're having to hide your sin. Because if you don't confess your sin, you have to hide it. Those are your only two options. There are no other options. Hide it or confess it. So find a brother you can journey with that can resource you and support you and who can be safe enough for you to confess your sin. Find somewhere you can invest in. Leadership development is one of the great crying needs of the Church of Jesus Christ today. We need more and more and more and more leaders. Find people that you can invest in to help them be the best that they can be. And then find some people who you can be in relationship with that you can talk to about Jesus and can show the life of Jesus. And you can just say, "Hey, listen, there's this guy. This amazing guy about 2,000 years ago." And all that sense of alienation, all that fear, and all that uncertainty and that insecurity, and that sense of rejection you feel at the very depths of your soul. Do you know what that guy says to you? "Come home. Come home. Come home. Do you know what? I'll come with you. But let's go home." And take some risks. Take some risks. Take some risks. get out of the boat. I beg you, get out of the boat. I don't know how many people in this room, 150 people, whatever. Just think what could happen if 150 people said, I'm going to answer those first two questions, but you know what? I'm going to go out and take some risks with my reputation, with my money, with my resources, with my job, with my life. I'm going to take some risks for the King of the Kingdom. I'm going to get out of the boat. Because actually, it's a lot more interesting on the water than it is just sitting here in this little boat. And it might be like Peter does just two verses later, that you'll get a bit worried and start to sink a little bit because you take your eyes off Jesus, but keep your eyes on him and you ain't going to sink. And if you start to, he'll grab you because that's the kind of thing a loving guy does. So take some risks. And I would say to, last time I'm going to say it, the younger guys here, whatever you do, choose your mentors carefully. Find a mentor that will take and has taken some risk. Because if we're honest, gentlemen, some of us, if we're really honest and look ourselves in the mirror, we ain't worth following. Because we've spent our entire life in the boat. We've never got out of the boat. We've never gone to the edge of the boat, let alone got out. But maybe now's the time to start. Maybe now is the time to start. And it may be your energy has failed you and you don't have much energy left. But you can still support and you can still mentor, you can still invest. The church I became a Christian at, Harris Salvation Army, North London, I first started preaching, we used to work with a rock band. I wasn't in the rock band, I wasn't allowed in the rock band, but it was a band. And in those days, you know, there was this kind of heavy metal thing going on, all this little acid jazz funk thing going on. So I worked with this acid jazz funk band thing. And it was really simple. Basically, we'd go out during the day and we'd speak to loads of teenagers on the street, tell them this free concert was on. And then the concert would stand up, and we'd lock the doors. No, we didn't lock the doors. The concert would happen, great concert, and then like three quarters of the way through, Muggins here would stand up and preach a message about Jesus, make an appeal, and young people would get saved. That's what we did. We did quite a lot of that. And you know what was amazing? This, we had one of those churches with a balcony at the back. It's not the wig gag, I've told that. The balcony at the back, yeah? And I noticed it once. And we had this old lady in our church. She was what they call in Salvation Army terms a brigadier, okay? Which just by the very names meant she was ancient. She was about 1,000 years old, at least. And she would walk with a stick, and she was a bit stooped, and she had white hair and everything else. But you know what? She came to every single one of these concerts. Yeah. And she would sit right on the front row, right in the corner, away from the draft of the door. So I went up there once, at the concerts, but just before we were starting, and it was kind of filling up. I went and said, oh, hi, Mr. Starbuck, how are you? And she said, oh, hello, Philip. And she said, just give me a minute. And I said, you all right? She said, yeah. She said, how can I help you? I said, I'm assuming you don't like this music. I said, I just want to say to you, I really, really appreciate you coming. You know. And she said, but a bit concerned, I said, because you've taken your coat off, but you've still got your kind of headscarf on. Why do you have a headscarf on? And she just looked at the floor, a bit embarrassed. She took the headscarf down, and she had these two huge wads of cotton wool in her ears. So she didn't have to listen to the music. And she said, to be honest with you, she says, I can't stand the music, and I make sure I can't hear the music. But I want to be supportive. We need a lot more Brigadier Starbucks. We need a lot more of them. So be one of them. Be one of them. And let's agree, shall we? Let's get out of the boat. And let's find this place. This is an amazing picture. Maybe the band could come up and join me if you would, please. Sorry, the young people could come and join me. That would be fantastic. This is a real photograph. I hope you can see it. Look it up online later if you can't. Vedran Smailovic. Vedran Smailovic was the lead cellist in the Sarajevo Symphony Orchestra. And as you remember, if you know your history, some of you weren't born, but the rest of us remember. There was a terrible war, and a great deal of violence and murder and brutality took place in Sarajevo. And lots of the beautiful buildings there were bombed out. And what do you do as that? What do you do? How do you contribute? What can you do? And so what Vedran Milosevic did was this. whenever a new building was bombed, once it had all calmed down, he'd go and play his cello in the bombed out building and play something beautiful to say to the world, this place might be busted up. We culturally and environmentally may be struggling. We may just see devastation around us. It looks all broken and ugly and horrible. But you know what? I'm getting out of the boat. And I'm going to play my beautiful cello the best I can. And bring some beauty to the heartbreak of this place. And say to people, it doesn't matter how you feel. Because there is hope. And I'm no politician. And I'm no soldier. And I'm no educator. And I'm no advocate. But I can play the cello. And I can play it really well. So in these bombed out places, I'll come and do that. So gentlemen, it's been great to be with you. I pray that God would help you and inspire you and equip you and give you the courage to get out of the boat and go and play your cello, whatever that is, whatever it is you can do, in the bombed out ruins of our culture and say to the world, there's hope. And his name is Jesus. Amen. May the Lord bless you.
He is friend to the lonely heart. He is peace to a troubled mind. He is hope to a weary soul. He is strength to the broken.